We are wrapping up, at least for now, our class on the timeline. Hopefully this review won't take more than a class, but we will see. I'm handing out an overview timeline of everything that we've discussed so far, and it is quite... You don't realize just how much time is covered sometimes with these timelines or with the books of the Bible until you actually write it out like this. It's really fascinating. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you. So I am always amazed when I look at this and I see all the time that's covered by the book of Genesis. I've mapped it out up here that the amount of time that Genesis covers is 2,368 years. And of course, that's give or take a few years, of course. As with any of these things, there's always a room for error. Consider the fact that, well, and by error, I don't mean that there's something wrong necessarily, but it's sort of a scientific term. Also can be considered uncertainty. Uncertainty doesn't necessarily mean that something is wrong. It simply means that we're not sure. So there could be a few more years added to this, a few fewer years added to this, or taken away from this. The reason why we have, so this is not an exact science in the sense that we can't get it down to the exact year, but we can get very close. Certainly, one thing you notice about this timeline, do we have enough room for billions of years?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. There is no room for billions of years, no room for millions of years. Only room for thousands of years. There are some places where we might have some disagreement. For instance, when we get down here to the 170 years I have here between Joseph and the Exodus, we have some disagreements there among sound brethren sometimes. And so we need to, I want to make sure that I present those and we understand why there are some disagreements and where we can find some what I think is the most likely. because sometimes I will present things the way that I've learned them, the way I've studied them. And I can't do anything else, because otherwise I think that it might be wrong. I don't want to teach anything that I think is wrong. Though I will present possibilities just in case. So, there is no room for millions of years, no room for billions of years. There's only thousands of years. And we see on here, on the bottom timeline, we have Genesis going all the way from Adam to the death of Joseph, because the death of Joseph is talked about. He lived to 110 years old, and we can see that that is the amount of time that we have talked about here. We have creation of the flood, and this is the end of the flood. That's what I have on there, because the flood lasted about a year. Creation to the flood, 1,657 years. The flood to Babel now, or Babel. So where do we get the, why do I say, how do I know the time frame of when Babel occurred, the Tower of Babel? It doesn't say specifically. So this is one of those matters of opinion. Because it says in Genesis chapter 10 that Peleg was named because the land was divided, that is a clue to indicate that that's likely when the tower, about the time he was born, was when the Tower of Babel occurred. And so I have on, that's where he comes up here, about 100 years after the flood, up until Peleg is born. And that's where that comes from, when the Tower of Babel is when the languages are confused and the Tower of Babel is falls apart. So we all had the same language for 1,757 years. That's a long time, isn't it?
I've thought about that same language in the past, and I don't know where I've heard this, that in the end, when time is ended, that we'll have the same language again.
And that's quite possible. I don't know exactly how that's going to work. I do think that we'll all... I'm sorry?
In heaven?
Well, I think we'll all be able to understand one another, whether it's the same language as we understand language today or not. Probably not, but again, who knows? Sam first, and then Dan.
So, obviously, when we are told either depart or well done, we're going to be able to understand it.
Right.
I can almost bet you all the money in the world that will not be English. So.
I just want to point out with the myriad of languages that we do have in the world today, in the human race, that as Christians, we still only have one language, and that's Christ. Mm. And that's going to be the common language. That is the common language.
Wow. I think some scientists might say mathematics is the common language, but I understand what you're saying. we have our different ways of expressing things, and even in mathematics, there are different ways that people could express certain things, but people have come together and decided this is how we're going to represent this and that and this. But with our spiritual language, we still have to be able to understand it. In a way, the language is being dispersed, varied up, was counteracted in the New Testament times with the gift of speaking in tongues, right? People were able to understand one another and speak to one another in different languages. And because of miraculous abilities. Now, we don't have those today, but we still have the ability to translate the New Testament into any language that we can think of. And the Bible altogether. And that's an amazing thing. In fact, there are people today who are working to translate the Bible into languages that don't even have a written language yet. And that's also a fantastic thing. A very, very good thing, getting Bibles into hands of people who otherwise might not have access to it. All right. From Babel, or Babel, to Abraham, and this is Abraham at 75 years old. We have 326 years, because we first encounter him in Genesis chapter 12 when he's 75. And so from the Tower of Babel to Abraham at 75 is 326 years. Now, there is some wiggle room here. And what I mean by that is, how do we know when Abraham was born in relation to his father Terah? We don't. It says that Terah was 70 years old and he had three sons. But we're not sure when all that occurred. So there's that possibility, there's that problem. And then there's a problem of, in Acts chapter 7, I believe, that Abraham is said to have left his family and gone to Canaan when he was, after his father had died. Now, we don't know how long his father was dead before he moved. I tend to think, and in my assumptions on here, it was right after his father died. So that's where that comes in. There is some uncertainty there. I want to make sure that we are aware of the gaps, so that we know that there is some room for error, that if someday we get to, when we get to heaven and we decide, hey, how old is the universe? How much time does the Bible cover? And God says something different than what, God says something different than what I've said. Then we know that there is some wiggle room in some of these places. Yes?
Question. Now, the bars and the names. So is that to represent the lifespan of like Adam, Seth, Enoch?
Yes, from Adam until, see how far did I get on that? From Adam until Joshua, I believe. No, Aaron and Moses. Yeah, Joshua. Yeah, from Adam until Joshua represents the lives of these people. Once we get to the period of the judges, then that represents the time period in which the oppressions occurred, and also the period of peace that we see under certain judges. And then by the time of the kings, that's their reign, when they reigned.
Strikes me that the lifespans of the fellows before the floods was so much longer longevity than the fellows after the flood.
That's right. That's right. And it leads many to believe that the flood somehow altered the environment in such a way that our lifespans were cut short. Or perhaps the bottleneck, the genetic bottleneck, I'm getting into some technical terms, I guess, but the genetic bottleneck where you have however many people were alive before the flood, right before the flood, and then you get down to 8 people, and 5 of them are, well, 3 of them are sons of 2 of them, so they're all related in some way. You have what's called a genetic bottleneck, and you have all these, so perhaps there's a genetic reason why we aren't living as long as we used to. So there's that possibility, and then there's environmental reasons that might play a role as well.
There's also a really obvious scriptural reason, Genesis 6:3. And the Lord said, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years.
Well, that's possible too. However, we do see quite a few people after that live longer than 120 years.
Right. But and today we don't.
True. But I think what he's talking about in that particular passage is it's 120 years until the flood. My spirit will not strive until with mankind until, because then the flood is going to happen. And then 20 years from then, finds Noah, and Noah starts building the ark, and takes 100 years to do that. So that's what we have for the ark and the building of that. All right. From Abraham to the death of Joseph, I have about 285 years. Again, there is some wiggle room here or there. I think previously, one of the things that we try to do is we try to find a calibration point, a point in which we can sync up certain events so that we know, okay, this happened at the same time, and so this is how this all works. With Joseph and his father Jacob, we're not told how old Jacob was when Joseph was born. So we have to find a common point, a link up to how we know how old Jacob was when Joseph was born. And I think what we see is that Joseph is 30 years old when he approaches Pharaoh. He is 30 years old when he approaches Pharaoh. His family comes to him 2 years into the years of famine. So we have 7 years of plenty. Now again, this assumes for a moment that the years of plenty occur right after Joseph has spoken with Pharaoh. That's an assumption. So we see that, and then there's 7 years of plenty and then 2 years of famine. So Joseph is 39. And then there's something I didn't point out when we went over this months ago, is I think there is some time, another year perhaps, before the Israelites come into Egypt. And we see perhaps Joseph is 40 years when it says Jacob is 130. Because he says, Pharaoh asks him, "How old are you?" And Jacob says, "I'm 130 years old." So we see that as well. And so we see these calibration points that we try to figure out when this occurred and how this all worked out. Again, keeping in mind some of these assumptions, but at the same time, we know that this might be a few years off, but it's not millions of years off. It's not thousands of years off. At most, it's hundreds of years off. At most. All right. Then we get to the Exodus. And I say 170 years for the Exodus, or that period of time, which is the death of Joseph until the Egyptians or the Israelites are at Mount Sinai. So we know that Moses was 80 years old when he called for the Exodus, when he approached Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go." He was 80 years old. We see that in a few different places. And then, so then we see the Exodus is about a year. They're into the Exodus about a year when they are at Mount Sinai. They stay there. They take about a month or so to get from Egypt to Mount Sinai. And then about a year they spend at Mount Sinai, at least in the book of Exodus, and then a little bit longer in the book of Numbers. So, where does this 89 years come from? Well, this is where the wiggle room comes in. There's a common idea that they were in Egypt for 430 years, and that's not an uncommon idea. In fact, in Exodus chapter 14, we see that their sojourn in Egypt was 430 years. Now, so people will say, okay, that's 430 years. But then we see in Acts chapter 13, I think, that there's a certain other period of time took 430 years, or about 430 years. So how do we reconcile those? Well, the way to do that is to say, it's 430 years from the time the promise is given to Abraham, or one of the promises in Acts or Genesis chapter 17, and then it's fulfilled, or at least that 400 or so years is whenever they leave Egypt. So that leaves about 170 years while they're in Egypt. So I think what proves that is the time or the Exodus chapter 6. We see the genealogy of Moses. And we see that his father is Amram. And his father lived, 130 years? And then his father, Kohath, lived 133 years, roughly. I don't remember exactly the years. I think it might be 137, 133. And then Levi lived 133, 137, one of those. And so that's where Levi comes in on here. I have Levi on this timeline. And so I've calculated about when Levi was born based on when Joseph was born and the time frame that they have, the possibility of when Levi could have been born. And so we have Levi outliving Joseph, in fact. And we have his son Kohath and his son Amram, and then Amram was the father of Aaron and Moses. Now, I have little asterisks, little stars next to Kohath and Amram, because I don't know exactly when they were born. I only know how long they lived. If you extend the period of the Exodus the time in Egypt to 430 years, there's no way, unless you have other generations in there somewhere, that these people could be connected. So that's why I suggest it's the shorter period of time. All right. Any comments or questions on that? Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, that's kind of right.
So all these guys were in the bloodline of Noah. correct?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because it was on the ark. And
right.
Okay. And then Noah, of course, goes back to the bloodline of Adam.
Right.
So everybody on the chart's in the same family.
But a descendant of Noah in some form or another, that's right. Now, we do have some genetic variability because we don't know the genealogy of Noah's sons' wives. And so we don't know exactly where they came from. We just know that they had wives. And so we have that it's still a genetic bottleneck, but it's still, we have those three people that we're not quite sure where they come from, except ultimately Adam. And chances are they were righteous, so they probably weren't descendants of Cain, because Cain's line was wicked. At least what little bit we see in Genesis chapter 4. So they probably weren't descendants of Cain.
So would Cain's line then wiped out with the flood?
Yes. Okay. Yes. In Genesis chapter 4, we see that Lamech, he's not represented on there because he's not in the we don't know his age or anything. It says that he was the first that we know of to practice bigamy. He had two wives. He was someone who had killed a man for simply wounding him. And he bragged about it. And we can see how sinful that Cain's line was. And it's not just Lamech. We see other things in that particular passage as well. All right. So that's Exodus, Leviticus. It's about a month, although if you remember when we talked about that, it kind of jumped around a little bit. Numbers jumped around a little bit too. And we see Numbers overall taking about 39 years. Now, there was about 38 years that we don't have any record of except for one or two things. And so a lot of things could have happened in those 38 years while they're wandering around in the wilderness. They're at Sinai for about 20 days in Numbers 1 through 10 and about 39 years from 11 through 36. Deuteronomy takes about a month because we see a mourning period that we see for Deuteronomy or for Moses after he dies is about a month. And so then they move into the period of Joshua in the conquest of Canaan. Now, we're not told how long this conquest of Canaan is. So how did I get 40 years? Well, there's again some a little bit of wiggle room. It could be 40 to 50 years. And I think I made that plain, or at least I tried to, whenever we talked about this. But as I was studying the period of the judges and how everything fit in, I lean more toward the left side, that it's 40 years, closer to 40 years that Joshua was around, that he was ruling, that he had, that there was a conquest, at least 6 years of those from the beginning of Joshua to whenever Judah receives their inheritance in chapter 12, I think. No, 14. In chapter 14 and 15, they receive Judah receives their inheritance, and I know that because Caleb says, "Oh, I received this," and here is the timeline of how things happened, and he says how old he is and all that. So that's how I know that's 6 years, and then so about 34 more years talked about there after Judah's inheritance until Joshua dies. I also have on there a couple passages from the Judges 1 and 2. Now, that you have to dice up chapter 1 a little bit to figure out what part takes place after Joshua dies and what part takes place before. But chapter 2, for the most part, takes place, at least the first half, takes place before Joshua dies because he says specifically, and Joshua spoke to the people, and then he died. So we see that, and then the end of chapter 2 gives a cycle for how things occurred during the period of the judges. Chapter 17 and 18, I have When we were going over this initially, I wasn't sure, did this take place after Joshua's death or before Joshua's death? I have come down on the opinion now that it takes place before Joshua's death. So we see Joshua chapter 17 and 18. It says, before the inheritance was given to Dan, or I believe, or before, or right after, or something to that effect, at the beginning of chapter 18. Then the Danites moved through Israel to go up north to take Laish and rename it Dan. And so that's where I come on that. That's where I fall on that. You can feel free to agree or disagree on that. So that's why I put that under the period of Joshua. Then we move on to the period of the judges. Now, we're not told exactly how long the period of the judges lasted, but we can figure it out. In 1 Kings chapter 6 and verse 1, we see that it was 480 years from Sinai, from the giving of the law, the Exodus, I should say, from the Exodus until the fourth year of King Solomon. So you subtract a few things, and you get a period of the judges of about 317 years. Now, those things that I subtracted were the 40 years in the wilderness, the 40 years of Joshua, the 40 years of Saul, the 40 years of David, and about 3 years of Solomon, which leaves 317 years for the period of the judges. If Joshua lasted 50 years, then it's 307 years for the period of the judges. But again, I think based on how everything seems to work in the judges and cutting and pasting things where they need to go, then we have that it should be 40 years and then 317 years for the period of the judges. Do you have a question, Alvin?
No, I had a thought on that. It seemed like, now, I've always heard Moses was never allowed to leave Sinai, and then the rest of the tribe wandered for 40 years.
Okay, so Moses was not allowed to enter into the promised land. He did wander with them in the wilderness. He dies at the end of Deuteronomy, being able to look out over the promised land, but not actually able to enter into it. And that's because of a sin that he had committed, that
he hit a rock and he supposed to tap it.
Well, he was supposed to speak to it. That's right. So he was supposed to, you were close. That's right. He was supposed to speak to a rock, but instead he struck it. And that was in the book of Numbers.
He struck it because he was angry, too.
He was angry. That's right. Because the people were complaining. Well, the people were complaining about it, and they were not trusting in God. And so Moses got upset by that. Yes?
If you remember, part of the sin was how he did it, because God said, because I was not given honor.
Right.
And what Moses said is, must we bring forth water from this rock?
Oh, man.
Yeah. And that was very, very different.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point. All right. So, I have then about 281 years that the book of Judges covers, from Judges chapter 3 to 16, which is the Mesopotamian oppression, the judgeship of Othniel, and then all the way down to Philistine oppression and the judgeship of Samson. And then chapters 19 through 21, I believe, takes place very likely during Othniel's judgeship. And so that's plugged in there somehow, somewhere in that time period, in that 281 years. So if you add up 281, 10, and 76, you're going to get more than 317, because some of this takes place at the same time. You'll notice in the timeline I have different time places where the judges occur, where the different judges occur. And I don't have them labeled at all because I didn't have space. No one would be able to read it. So what I encourage you to do is go back and look at those lessons if you want to learn about that again. We hardly have the time. But that's where I fall on that. At the very least, we can be relatively certain that it was about 317 years for the period of the judges. I have Ruth in there. I have Ruth about 10 years because Elimelech and Naomi, with their family, moved to Moab because of a famine, which I believe is connected to the famine in Judges chapter 6. And they moved to Moab, and they stayed there for about 10 years until Elimelech and their sons die. And so all they have are their sisters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. And of course, Ruth and Naomi go back to Bethlehem, go back to Israel after their death, after their death of their husbands. I forgot to mention Job. I have Job. Again, there's an asterisk there saying, is this when it occurs? I have some circumstantial evidence that it takes place during the time while Israel is in Egypt. Very circumstantial, so take that for what it's worth. A lot of people will say it happened before the time of the Exodus, before the giving of the law. They'll say it happened before, or most people will say it happened between the flood and, most people that I've heard anyway, between the flood and the giving of the law. And so that's about where I fit it. Of course, a lot of people who say that will also say it took place around the time of Abraham. Again, perhaps, but I think I have some circumstantial evidence that suggests it takes place during the time of while Israel is in Egypt, and that evidence is Elihu, one of Job's young friends, who is introduced pretty late into the book of Job, is of the family of Ram. And of course, that could mean anything, but if the person who's writing that is talking about the family of Ram, then the only other Ram that I find is in the line of Judah. We see Ram is one of the first sons who was born while they were in Egypt, I believe before they became slaves. There's Judah, Perez, Hezron, I believe, then Ram, Aminadab, and Nashon, and then Salmon. So Nashon is the one who led them out of Egypt. And Hezron, Perez, and Judah all enter into Egypt. They had been born before entering into Egypt. I believe Hezron had probably just been born when they entered into Egypt. And so Hezron gives birth or begets Ram, who begets Aminadab, who begets Nashon, who leads them out of Egypt, or at least the tribe of Judah out of Egypt. And of course, he doesn't survive in the wilderness because he's one of those who said, who didn't believe Joshua and Caleb. And so he doesn't survive. And so his son Salmon, though, does survive. And we learn in Matthew, the book of Matthew, that Salmon marries Rahab and begets Boaz, which is the Boaz that marries Ruth. So that's how that's all connected. It all works out in that way. And then we see 1 Samuel. I have 76 years that 1 Samuel chapters 1 through 11, the period of the judges, take place. Now, that again is a little bit of math involved. We're not told exactly how long that takes. But this is from Hannah praying for a son in the first chapter of 1 Samuel all the way to Saul's coronation in chapter 11. So I believe that that's about 76 years. Then we see the United Kingdom. We're not told in the Old Testament exactly how long Saul's reign was. We have some idea in 1 Samuel 13:1, but again, that's a very doubtful passage. We do have a passage in Acts chapter 13 that tells us that it was 40 years. We see David, of course, 40 years, 7 years in Hebron, and 33 years in Jerusalem and then Solomon another 40 years. So there we go. That is our timeline. We also have the books of poetry. We mentioned Job a little bit. But most of the Psalms I have on here take place in the time of David and also in the time of Saul. There's a little bit in the time of Saul while David is around, is one of Saul's mighty men, one of Saul's soldiers. So we see that David is, or that the Psalms take place in that period of time. The Song of Solomon, one of the first things that Solomon wrote. Then the book of Proverbs during his reign, and Ecclesiastes toward the end of his reign. Of course, some of the Psalms are written by other people, and most of them are during the time of David. I have on here also, 1 Chronicles extends all the way back to the very beginning. Because if you look at the first verse of 1 Chronicles, it says, Adam, Seth, Enosh. It goes into a genealogy from the very beginning. And so there are little stories here or there that the book of 1 Chronicles talks about up until chapter 10. And then from 10 to 29, it talks about the reign of David, or at least the fall of Saul and then the reign of David. And so I have a little bold line here to indicate most of 1 Chronicles takes place in the time of David. And of course, 1 Kings starts with the reign of Solomon and moves on until the reign of Jehoshaphat and Ahab. And then 2 Chronicles goes from Solomon all the way to the fall of Judah, the reign of Zedekiah. Yes?
Quick question. I thought last week you said Proverbs were written in the time or were by Solomon.
Sorry, what did I say?
Well, the Psalms you're saying was written by David.
Yes.
But you've got Proverbs here under David on the timeline.
Okay. I see the confusion. So Saul is that black area there. David is the white area, and Solomon is the pink area. The names are next to their timeline. So that's right. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. I'm glad that could be clarified. One last thing I want to point out, and I kind of hinted at it earlier, there are certain points of where we can synchronize what we know of history with the biblical calendar. And we have actually not really come across any of those yet. Many of us realize and understand that the building of Solomon's Temple takes place at around 1000 BC, and I have it on my timeline as 1009 BC, which is about right. A lot of people will say it was 976, I think, when the building of the temple first happened. So we're still in that ballpark. There is, in the middle of Hezekiah's reign, however, there is a landmark. And when we get to that, eventually, we'll see if our timeline meets up with history. And won't that be fun? Now, the calibration point that I originally used is when the people of Judah are exiled from their land, and there's this particular date for that, and that's the original calibration point that I've used. And so we'll see if that still pans out by the end, because I've made quite a few arrangements or rearranged things since that original timeline. Okay. And again, one of the difficulties is that we could possibly use the names of the kings of Egypt, or the pharaohs of Egypt. But the problem is, very few of the ones that are talked about in Scripture have an historical counterpart, at least that we know of. There are some that are mentioned that may have had a common name or a different name that's talked about there, but in the Bible, they're given, in history, they're given a more regal name, perhaps. And so there is some difficulty in trying to connect the Egyptian calendar with what we understand of Israeli history. And I think we covered that quite a bit a few months ago when we looked at Exodus. So there is some issues with that, but there are some other kings, especially kings of Assyria, that went up against Hezekiah, and we can see that there's a particular time frame for that. The 14th year of Hezekiah corresponds to about 701 BC. And so we'll see if that matches when we get there. Any comments or questions before we close out the timeline? For now. All right, so for next week, we are going to look at the Gospel according to Mark. So if you will, if you want to prepare, read the whole Gospel. It's short, 16 chapters. And so, but if you don't have the time to do that, you can read chapter 1. We're going to be going over an introduction to start with, so we may or may not read it depending on how much we cover in the introduction, because there's a lot to cover. I might narrow it down before we get there, though, because we don't need to know all that. All right. Very good.